everyone. This is Cameron Marceau with Black Clover Project doing another episode of the Monster in a Glass podcast here sitting with Jason Cruz, our historian, librarian, research guy. The new format for the show, if you've been listening, you've probably seen or heard. It's a podcast, so you haven't seen it, but you've probably heard that we have a two-part system going where we're talking about the culture and history and all of the background to these cocktails and the ingredients and the people. And then we take it to the Brixton, where we have our bartender, Michael Donnelly, who works there, does, you know, great drinks. We need a specialist to make them. We don't feel comfortable doing it at home because when you fuck it up, you don't know whether you fucked it up or if it's just supposed to be bad. So we take it to the Brixton where we know we're going to get it made right, and then we taste it and talk about it. This next cocktail we're doing is the Fairbank cocktail, and it's all about Douglas Fairbanks.
Yeah, that's what Ted Haig would like you to believe, although maybe not.
It's hard to tell. He really seems to be pushing for the fact that it was about Douglas Fairbanks, it was made for him. And I'm not saying he just came up with this out of his ass, because he does note something where there's a comment in some book, the Savoy Cocktail Book, that says, "We often wondered what Doug did it on." I guess the person who wrote the Savoy Cocktail Book thought maybe Douglas Fairbanks did it, or maybe it's just a weird reference to somebody else named Doug. I mean, it's the fact that it's called
It has more star power this way.
They have it listed here as a Fairbank cocktail, but really, to be honest, it shows up as a Fairbanks in every other context that I saw. The only place I saw where it was labeled the Fairbank was Robert of the Embassy Club.
It's Robert Vermeer.
Robert Vermeer. And so the book that Haig cites as having the recipe, the ABC of Mixing Cocktails, by Harry, I'm going to butcher this name, but I'm going to say it's McElhenney. It's Scottish. I'm terrible at pronunciation of any language.
Looking at the name McElhenney makes me say McElhenney, but like when you said
McElhenney.
I mean,
well, there is a name McElhenney that is spelled different. It's McElhenney.
That's, so, I mean, I wouldn't have thought that. So maybe
that's probably
maybe
the only reason.
Your version is right.
Why don't we call him Harry? We'll call him Harry
because there's a Harry Johnson.
Well, but this Harry was famous for a different reason, but we'll get into that later. So Robert and Harry, we'll call him Rob and Harry. They both had it in there as the Fairbank. You know what? It's the Fairbanks. It just is. It's the Fairbanks cocktail. It is called the Fairbanks cocktail. It shows up everywhere else. And actually, the story behind it has nothing to do with Douglas Fairbanks at all.
Well, then why is it the Fairbanks cocktail?
Well, that's the thing. This is where I have issues with Ted Haig, is that a lot of times with the things that he puts in the book, the research isn't done. And it's just assuming. And even when Robert Vermeer says that it's named after Charles W. Fairbanks, who was Vice President of the United States under Teddy Roosevelt.
Was he Fairbank or Fairbanks?
He was Fairbanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. Everything I found that said it was Fairbanks.
Okay.
I can check right now.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, Charles W. Fairbanks. So why it was named the Fairbank, who knows? Misprint, okay. It could have been the fact that Robert Vermeer and
But it was both Harry, Douglas Fairbanks and Charles
Fairbanks. Yeah.
So there's no reason not to have the S.
Right. My guess is it was a misprint. I found them in recipes books all the time.
Okay.
But I think that in Robert Vermeer's case, he was Belgian. He did have a note that said this drink is called after Senator Fairbank, a personal friend of the late President Roosevelt of America. So
I wouldn't have called him a personal friend.
They were colleagues.
Yeah, well,
oh, not maybe not collegial. They worked in the same place.
Yeah,
for a
exactly,
while.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
so politicians.
Yeah. So Charles Fairbanks was vice president. No, he wasn't vice. Was he vice president?
He was vice president,
but he worked very well with McKinley. Initially, he was advisor in foreign affairs, including a border dispute with Canada over Alaska.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's why Fairbanks is named Fairbanks.
And not Fairbank?
Yeah.
So the reason I even question this, I'm looking at it and I was like, okay, so it's named Douglas it's named after Douglas Fairbanks. And then I was like, but there was nothing that indicated that. And he's putting it at 1922. That's the other interesting thing. And I'll get into this later. But both Harry's book, The ABC of Mixing Cocktails, and Robert Vermeer's book came out in 1922.
Okay.
Both published in London.
It would, yeah, because 1922, nobody was drinking, so to speak.
Right, so they're both published in London. They're in America. Harry, let's say McElhenney, was Scottish by birth, was not in America. And Robert Vermeer was Belgian, moved to London for a while, and then moved back to Belgium. So I started thinking, like, okay, well, this is, let's see if we could check out, no, Douglas Fairbanks. So, right, let's see why they named it after him. I started seeing recipes that were older than this book, and it seemed to, Haig was seemed to be saying, well, yeah, this is the origins of the drink were the ABC of mixing cocktails, but it is not. There's a Fairbanks cocktail that shows up in 1910 in Jack's Manual on Vintage and Production, Care, and Handling of Wines, Liquors, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Completely different recipe.
1910.
Made with bitters, rye whiskey, apricot brandy. They're not even close. Not even close to the other one, but named the Fairbanks cocktail. So I started doing some more searching. I find also a reference in 1910 in the Jack London play Theft. And the play has somebody saying, "The gods have given him into our hands," as somebody by the name of Chalmers speaking. "The gods have given him into our hands. That speech will do more to break his influence." And then somebody, Hubbard, interrupting, "than a Fairbanks cocktail." So they're referring to a Fairbanks cocktail in 1910. Then I find a reference in a 1913 but from a man named J. Collins McLean. It's his, it seemed to be his autobiography, Sidelines of a Businessman or The Meanders of a Sigma Chi. And it says, "I never felt better in my life. Nothing to drink stronger than a Fairbanks cocktail either." So I'm seeing all these references and I'm like, okay, clearly.
Nothing to drink stronger than a Fairbanks cocktail?
Either, yeah. Now, a lot of these books, these articles, these things I'm reading from the time period, hard to figure out if they're being sarcastic, if it's tongue-in-cheek, if it's...
I'm developing a story here, man.
Yeah, so...
I'm getting an idea of what's going
on. So I'm like, okay, so clearly this drink is older. It's not Douglas Fairbanks. By this point, I'm going, it's just not. Yeah. I don't believe it. Not that Douglas Fairbanks, because he says, well, he was the most famous actor of the time. In 1922, he was the most famous actor of the time throughout the early 1900s. And 20, you know, there was also Douglas Fairbanks Jr. So I didn't buy the story. But then I find a story in a book called From Harrison to Harding, A Personal Narrative Covering a Third of a Century, 1888 to 1921, by A. Wallace Dunn. And he's telling the story of Vice President Fairbanks, who became a victim of one of the fool friends that afflict men in high station.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vice President Fairbanks was actually a senator of Indiana for a while. And President Roosevelt was passing through Indiana on one of his many trips and stopped in Indianapolis, where he was entertained at a luncheon by the vice president. Now, what's happening here is this friend of Fairbanks sees that they don't have any cocktails at this luncheon, and corrects it by adding cocktails. Well, Fairbanks was a teetotaler.
Yeah, he was a Methodist teetotaler.
And so this was a problem. And Roosevelt saw a cocktail in front of him and drank it. Although Roosevelt also was, he wasn't a teetotaler, but he also wasn't, from what I understand, he wasn't huge on drinking and really kind of frowned on excessive drinking.
Yeah, okay.
But he drank the cocktail.
He was a man's man.
He was a man. He was Teddy Roosevelt.
I know.
He was... fought bars with his bare hands, I think.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that this says the capriciousness of the public was shown in the fact that there was no general condemnation of Roosevelt for drinking the cocktail, but the temperance societies severely condemned Vice President Fairbanks for having cocktails at his table.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I was like, wow, this is just like politics today.
I know. It's like Roosevelt has this Teflon.
Yeah.
Oh. And okay.
Untouchable.
I actually found a quote from Roosevelt, what he said after this came to light, and people were all up in arms about it. He said, "I don't like cocktails anyhow. I like champagne. And that made the incident at Fairbanks' home all the more gruesome to me." It's like, here's a bus. There you go, Mr. Fairbanks. Yeah. Go under the bus.
Right. Clean that
mess. Well, we already said, I believe that when McKinley was assassinated, Fairbanks ended up becoming vice president for Roosevelt. It was kind of like, well, here's this guy and I've got to have a vice president, so...
Well, what I was reading was that Roosevelt actually didn't have a vice president for his first term.
Yeah, and that was a problem.
And that was a problem. And I didn't seem to find why President Fairbanks, but maybe you're right, I just don't know why, or Vice President Fairbanks was put in there as his running mate. But it is interesting that, yeah, the Teflon nature of Teddy Roosevelt. And what it says additionally is that...
Do you know the date?
1907, I think, was okay. The date. From all the things I could...
And we're seeing lots of things coming out in 1910, right?
Right.
That's okay.
It's very close. Uh-huh. So this is when I was like, aha, okay, this is really interesting. And what's interesting is that it's not a chapter, but it's a subheading within the chapter from this book that's called Fairbanks Cocktail. That's how I found it.
Okay.
And so it says that because Fairbanks was a teetotaler Methodist, it says more than that, the Methodist Church refused to send Fairbanks, who never took a drink of anything spirituous, to the Methodist Council, but did send Senator Beveridge, which is weird that his name is Beveridge. But that kind of says it all, and everything about this incident afterwards really did, I mean, it ruined his standing with the Methodist Church. He was supposed to be one of the leaders, and this ruined it for him.
Do you know what his nickname was after this?
No.
Cocktail Charlie.
It is really interesting. So I was like, okay, this is clearly what the drink is named after. So I just kept doing more research, and I'm finding the same story show up. And I start doing newspaper searching, trying to see if I can come across anything. And I'm coming across these articles, these very strange articles. But then I come across something where I go, here it is. Here is the exact explanation. And it couldn't be laid out in a more clear way that I was like, did you know I was looking for this information? So the name of the article, it's from the Chicago Daily Tribune, July 22nd, 1907. More fame for Fairbanks. Cocktail bears his name. Delicious concoction served as a frappe in tall, thin glasses appears in a St. Louis cafe. They said, St. Louis has the Fairbanks cocktail. It was invented last night at McTague's. It is served as a frappe and is as... What does it say? It's old. So it's as cool as Fairbanks, and it has a cherry in it, too. It was suggested not by the cold water dip that Vice President took in saving a waitress, a watery grave, which we'll touch on, but by that one lone cocktail the Indiana man took at the dinner given to President Roosevelt. So they're saying that he did drink a cocktail. So even the stories are a little funny, but yeah, it is pointing that incident. Henry Hoffman, who wears a white apron, is the inventor. His formula is as follows. One glass full of cracked ice, 1/3 part of French vermouth, 2/3 of dry gin, 3 dashes of creme de noia, a dash of orange bitters, a real cherry, and then some more ice.
That's because it's
a Fairbanks cocktail. In honor of the vice president, it is served in a tall, thin glass. And I'm not sure what that means. But,
okay.
But that was like, well, there you go. That clearly tells you where the origin is. Uh-huh. It's not Douglas Fairbanks at all.
And that is the correct recipe.
According to the book, and it comes from 1907 in Chicago Daily Tribune. So, yeah. Which is a much more interesting story than being named after Douglas Fairbanks anyway.
Yeah. Here's another thing. The article that you read about the Sigma Chi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Fairbanks apparently made the comment that his preferred drink was buttermilk.
Gross.
There were some people who made a cocktail in his name. Also, tall glass with a slice of cucumber and buttermilk filling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly something to, like, poke more fun at him.
Right.
And what did they say in that article? Something as...
I never felt better in my life. Oh, in the article about the water?
No, the Sigma Chi.
Oh, yeah, I never felt better in my life. Nothing to drink stronger than a Fairbanks cocktail either. So I think you're right there, because it didn't make sense out of... I was reading it, and I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah, so that's the teetotaler side. They're admitting, they know that he's a teetotaler, and now bartenders are making fun of him by making cocktails in his name. And I bet you there were multiple ones.
Oh, I'm sure
there were. With lots of different recipes.
That Jack's Manual has rye, whiskey, apricot, brandy, and bitters.
Because that's just asking for people to make a cocktail in his name.
Right. I mean, why wouldn't you? And if you're in St. Louis at some hole-in-the-wall bar, or even if Chicago Daily Tribune, and I think Jack Grohusko, I think his name is,
yeah.
was from New York. So, I mean, this isn't 1910. It's not like news isn't traveling fast. Newspapers reprinted articles all the time. But an article like that probably wouldn't have been reprinted in the New York Times. They're looking for the big news stories that are going to be reprinted from one to the other.
Okay.
A drink being invented in a bar in St. Louis, not so much, is going to end up in the New York Times. So it's possible, never even made it to, you know, New York. And Jack was like, hey, I'm going to create a Fairbanks cocktail. Maybe he created it around the same time. Maybe it was just a thing. People were like, I want a Fairbanks cocktail.
Yeah.
I keep hearing about this thing. And exactly. Hey, I'll make you one.
It's this big thing in the news.
It's interesting.
And I bet everybody wanted to know what it was, too. You know,
it's like, I don't know.
I don't know. I'll make you one.
You know, rye whiskey?
Yeah, let's create
one. Rye whiskey.
I read that the friend at his luncheon, her husband owned a bar, and that's where they got the cocktails. She saw that they had nothing to drink, and so she sent a message to her husband to make a full 40 cocktails and have them delivered.
Yeah. I read something similar, and I didn't note that information down, but yeah, that sounds familiar to something else I read. It's a very strange story. I think it's a much more interesting story for the name. It sort of brings to like a lot of things in my mind. One, how much politics have changed, because just having the president drink a cocktail and you didn't even do it and you don't drink and somehow you are now this nationwide joke.
Yeah.
And it's ruining your political career is crazy when you have the shit that politicians do now. And it's like, oh, sorry.
But you know what? Yeah. No. You know what? This, for this time period,
scandalous.
Was a dick pic from Wiener. That's what this was. Mm-hmm. The messaging.
They should have called it the dick pic cocktail.
Yeah. The messaging for the time period was all prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got stuck in this situation, and it was scandalous like nobody's business, I'm sure. I mean, we look at it and we think it's stupid and ridiculous.
It's over 100 years ago, though, based on this story, that people had a little more concern over whether you stuck to who you were. Like, now, politicians, they say whatever they want, they get in office, they'll change their mind, and everybody's like, oh, fuck you, you asshole, you changed your mind, but then, whatever.
Yeah.
This ruined his political career, and it was just because of a simple mistake that he had nothing really to do with, but it went against everything he stood for, and people held him accountable.
Yeah.
That's weird over one cocktail. And you know what? The interesting thing is, though, I did come across other news articles where people were backing him, and specifically in the Methodist Church, they were saying, you know who should be held responsible? President Roosevelt. He drank the cocktail. So they weren't, it wasn't that people were just blanket, you know what? I think most people didn't give a shit.
People wanted the scandal.
People who drink probably were like, good.
Don't you think that this, to some extent, was Fairbanks versus Roosevelt? And in that match, Roosevelt's going to win. Oh, it's geez. Like everybody loved that guy. So,
yeah.
And then, like you were saying, true to yourself, that mattered back then. There was another thing that came up later, right? You were talking about...
They mentioned it. They kind of refer to it in the article I read from the Daily Tribune that talks about, it was suggested not by the cold water dip the vice president took in saving a waitress a watery grave. There's other articles, and again, it's like, I couldn't even figure out at first what they were saying, because the language was like, I don't know if this is being sarcastic, I don't know if this really happened, but what I could guess from these articles and what it sounds like happened was that Charles Fairbanks saved a waitress from drowning in a lake. So what's interesting is that most of the newspaper articles are like, whatever. And this one from the Cincinnati Inquirer, and I didn't get the whole part of it, but they asked some guy about it, and he was basically like, I think his comment was something like, I think he was just trying to get his tip back from the waitress. You know, like, this is from, let's see.
Oh my God!
So, like, the Fairbanks incident, the cocktail, I think happened in early 1907.
No, it
happened earlier, because it was on his tour. I think it was on Teddy Roosevelt's campaign tour.
It was in June.
Was it June?
It was in June, 1907.
Okay, so a month later, he saves a woman from drowning. Uh-huh. And you would guess, well, this will fix all of this nonsense with the cocktail. It didn't seem to.
I gathered that there were some people who actually thought that Fairbanks had staged the whole thing to improve his reputation, which I couldn't find anywhere evidence one way or the other. But when somebody says that, it's now out. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like the guy, that's the story. Mm-hmm. You're going to go with, oh, he's just trying to make himself look better, and that was all a setup.
Again, yeah. Not too different from politics
today. Yeah, no, it's, yeah. And there's no way he can come back from it. So, like, even if he actually did save the waitress,
yeah,
it ended up being bad. It was like, to some extent, Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize, yeah. Right? Well, how, you know, what the fuck did he deserve that for? It's like, he didn't ask for it.
Yeah, right. He didn't make the Nobel Prize.
And that ended up being
international thing.
I know. It ended up being this horrible thing for him. You know, it's like, you know, granted, I felt like it was kind of ridiculous, but
yeah,
it wasn't his fault in any case.
No, that's true. And I don't know why you would expect that it would. And whether it was staged or not, I'm not sure why you would expect this to correct your image and people. But it is kind of interesting that within a month of him being all over the news, there's this story about him saving a waitress, and it's like, it does seem like one of those fantastic things, like, let's divert attention.
Yeah.
Right? By doing something like you save a woman from a lake. Let's just say that. Right. And then it happens, and then people are like, yeah, whatever. Let's go back to talking about the cocktail, because I'm enjoying it. I love me a Fairbanks cocktail.
I kind of wonder who he was, like, as a person, because was he just wimpy? Was he uncharismatic? Was he, like, I mean, what? Why did everybody want to beat on him so much? That's where I go with this.
I couldn't find anything that said who he was or what he was like. My guess is that you're right. There didn't seem to be any comment from him about this whole thing. There didn't seem to any pushback from him. And you would expect that if your name was tainted like that, that you'd come out and say, I had nothing to do with it. This was a simple mistake. But it happened in his home state, where he was a senator. If you think about it, who cares?
Yeah.
It happened, and why would you think anything would come out of it? It's like, geez. You served alcohol, and I'm a Methodist, and the president drank a cocktail. So what?
Yeah.
Like, why would that... to me, if that were me, I'd be like, and? It wouldn't even occur to me that this would do damage. But probably, once it started going, how do you even do damage control? Again, I'd probably be sitting there going, that's a blowover.
Yeah.
Like, it's so minor that you gotta figure that he was either not sweating it, or maybe he resigned himself to say, I can't take on Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's another possibility.
Fucking country loves this guy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to sit here and get beat on.
Ripped a tiger in half with its teeth. And they love him. I can't. I think it's great that Teddy Roosevelt was just pissed that he didn't have champagne and he got a cocktail.
Yeah.
But he still drank the cocktail. He just was pissed about it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He sounds like an a-hole.
Totally. And there's no doubt. So
it's a really interesting story. So one of the things that I want to mention is that I took issue sort of with Haig's, and here I go on my Haig bashing. He mentions in his drink notes, I was like, why would he say this? And to an extent, I corroborated what he's saying, but in a different way. So he says, Vermeer, a Frenchman, was perhaps less familiar with the nuances of the United States, whether relating to film or politics, because the senator he cited was Charles Warren Fairbanks, who was in fact Theodore Roosevelt's vice president. Fairbanks died 4 years before the first books, including The Cocktail, were published. So all of these things, I was like, okay, wait a minute. What is being a Frenchman, which he was not, he was Belgian, have to do with...
they speak French.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, and then I guess they're just Frenchmen.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with knowing anything about politics? You know, as I know Europeans, they know way more about American politics than Americans know about American. Now, maybe back in the 20s this wasn't as true, but I think there was a language barrier, which is probably why it ended up in the recipe book as Fairbank. Fairbanks died 4 years before the first books, including The Cocktail, were published. That's just false. Maybe in that incarnation, in that book, but even if he did die 4 years before, it's clearly the drink survived well over a decade from 1907 in a small St. Louis bar where it was created. It somehow managed to end up in cocktail books in London. So it's like, so clearly that has nothing to do with it. I was just like, ugh, You're just being weird about your language there. But it also, Harry McElhenney was Scottish. Harry, he started at the New York Bar in Paris in 1911. And then he actually bought it in 1923 from the owner, and he renamed it Harry's New York Bar, which is very famous. Paris Bar, Ernest Hemingway is noted as drinking
there. Oh yeah, The Last Generation. Tons of stuff came out of there.
Which is still in operation to this day by his descendants.
So he's responsible for... See, now these stories are all kind of coming together and gelling, and I'm thinking back to other cocktails that we talked about, and... he's responsible for a lot.
But all these things, and then he was saying, well, he, you know, Vermeer's wrong. He's saying he was a senator. Well, he was a senator. You know, he wasn't mistaken about that. And then, as I was saying, the drink shows up in 1907, so it has nothing to do with Douglas Fairbanks. The Savoy Cocktail Book mentioning that something about Doug, whatever. Maybe they just assumed it was named after Douglas Fairbanks.
Or maybe they were making a riff on the name.
Could be. That's true.
So that because everybody else knew Douglas Fairbanks more than...
Yeah, and you got to figure by 1930 that people hadn't totally forgotten about this
thing. Yeah, so it would have been a kind of a joke.
You know, if it was showing up in cocktail books in 1922 and in London and Vermeer was saying, oh, this is where the name came from. Here's the interesting thing, and I don't think it crossed over with the time in the 20s of the recipe coming out, but in Harry's New York Bar in Paris... They hold presidential straw polls and have since, like, I think the 70s, I think is what I... And so they...
Oh, my God.
So if you have a lot of GIs, ex-GIs, hanging out in Paris in this New York bar, they're probably going to try to be up to date on what's happening in America.
Yeah.
They didn't just turn around and go, oh, fuck it, whatever. Yeah. It's, no, you're right. I don't live there anymore. So... To me, it's possible. And if Robert Vermeer was in the same city at the same time, publishing a book at the same time, Harry McElhenney and Robert Vermeer probably knew each other.
Okay.
You know, there's got to be a connection, which probably is why there's two Fairbank cocktails. You know, maybe they didn't exactly know all the details, but the information they were getting was somebody named Fairbank. It's named after them, and he was vice president under Teddy Roosevelt, who was internationally famous. So,
okay,
I don't know. It's a lot of guessing there. But
wow, this is an awesome story.
Better than Douglas Fairbanks.
Even more than when I was looking through things, sitting here and talking about it, it's just like layers are peeling back. And it's like, oh my God, yeah, okay, yeah.
I want to do something totally small, like Charles Fairbanks did. Allowing a cocktail. I want a cocktail named after me for something like that, so people are like, oh, this is the cruise cocktail. You know? Like, yeah, remember that thing he did? But I want it to be something so stupid that people are like, I don't get it. Like, wait, he allowed a cocktail? He gave the president a cocktail? I'm not sure what... Was this the cocktail he gave him? Because it doesn't seem to be related. No. It just seems to be like somebody created a recipe and was like, this is after Chuck Fairbanks.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a really awesome cocktail story. One of the best ones I've heard, I think.
I agree. I really enjoyed researching this. And at first I was like, ha! I proved Hank wrong. But then after that, I was like, this is just a much more interesting story than saying, oh, it's attributed to an actor. I mean, because there's probably tons of cocktails named after actors. And unless it's something that they drink all the time, who cares? You know?
Yeah. This was like dirty politics.
Dirty politics. This was...
Okay, so we're going to take this to the tasting team over in the Brixton now. And we'll see what Fairbanks tastes like. Brixton in Andersonville, Chicago. And I'm here with the tasting team. It's team. We should all have like jerseys. Like numbers. Yes. So, Fairbank cocktail.
looks delicious.
Well, we don't even have them. You're just looking at the picture.
The picture looks delicious. Maybe I'm jumping the gun, but that looks pretty good.
You're just all excited about the cherry.
I am excited about
okay,
the cherry.
Okay, so here it is.
It's pretty.
This is the poison, right here.
With your next certified artificial color.
Now,
it smells amazing.
This is creme de noyau. And and by creme, we do not mean Bailey's creamy. Or creme means a sweet liqueur.
I guess it looks a little bit like Kool-Aid.
It does. And it's a little syrupy.
Now, originally, the red came from beetle carapaces.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Beetle juice.
Yeah. The cochineal beetle. Just like Campari. Campari used the same thing.
That was a popular pigment in paints.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. The beetle carapace paints?
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, it seems people are willing to drink it.
They might as well paint with it.
So this is made from pits. Cherry pits, apricot pits.
Oh, it's more than peach
apricot pits.
Or
apricot
peach pits.
Apricot kernels.
It's the kernels. So what they do is they crack them open and then cook them up.
How do you think
now?
Of that?
Now I know that's my thought because the kernels of apricots and peaches are poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
They contain an ingredient called amygdalin that, when it gets into your stomach, turns into cyanide.
What?
Cyanide.
So we're gonna go around the table. This is Bethany Lang.
Hello.
Just one real quick question. Have you ever gotten in trouble for putting anything in your mouth?
Not that I can remember.
No? And this gentleman is Kevin Rutajczyk.
Yes.
Have you put something in your mouth you shouldn't have?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Do you recall what it was?
Yes.
That's as much as we're going to get.
I'm hugging okay. This. I don't know why.
And you are?
Okay.
I'm Rachel Rubin.
And have you ever put anything in your mouth you shouldn't have?
Probably. Yeah.
She was thinking.
We're also joined by...
Oh, Nicole Pizzini.
Now you've joined us before in such episodes as the Brooklyn Cocktail.
Oh man, that Brooklyn Cocktail is what brought me back. That was so delicious.
Were you happy to have that in your mouth?
I was very pleased to have a Brooklyn Cocktail in my mouth. Yes.
Okay.
Back to put more things in her mouth.
That's
yeah. This is like right up my alley. I love anything almond. I love marzipan. Like anything almonds,
marzipan is like so sweet.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
So rich it like destroys you.
It yeah, is. I know, and it's
no,
amazing.
I can't do that.
It'd make your teeth hurt.
Yes, it's so good.
Okay,
especially
so.
When it's covered in chocolate.
Yeah, I gotta get on this marzipan boat.
Yeah.
Yes to marzipan.
Delicious.
But this is very delicious.
It's so good.
This is.
It's really, really good.
The color is frightening.
Yeah. No, I was... It's a little off-putting.
But I could drink this all day.
Do we know what the alcohol content on this is?
No.
They took the bottle.
No, I...
Because
yeah.
I... It seems like it could get tricky.
It doesn't taste...
It doesn't taste very strong at all.
But the way it crept up the sides, like when you put like bourbon or something in a glass...
That's
you
what
get like
does.
Kind of fumy creeping up on the sides. And like... You only see that with like fortified and kind of stronger beverages. Beer doesn't do that. Wine doesn't normally do that. But like when you get something that's a little bit higher, it kind of creeps up the sides like that.
I'm curious to hear how it compares with this other concoction.
Yeah.
So this is it's not bright red.
No.
Michael,
is it clear?
Our bartender, clear, yeah. Michael Donnelly, he came by and brought this over. He wanted to see what we thought of this. It's Orgeat and maraschino, or
yeah.
It's Luxardo.
Luxardo, yeah.
But I mean, it smells wildly different.
It's, oh, really?
Yeah, it really does. It's not... It's more earthy.
Mm. Sounds better.
Oh! You obviously don't have the same taste.
This one too sweet for you?
And fiery.
Yeah, the other one was
really... Oh, really?
For me.
Yeah.
It does smell very different.
Yeah.
I'm scared of it.
What'd you think of that?
No.
No? You didn't care for that?
Well, it's not... It's not nearly as easy drinking.
No, 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 no. You could make popsicles out of the creme.
So good. Yeah. My new favorite thing. I need to find cocktails with this in it. like this one.
There aren't that many.
Really?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are turned off by how sweet it is. The color also.
Yeah, I would not pick it out of a lineup.
It's gonna make your drink look like something, a little, you know, pink or, you know.
It'd be a fun addition to a martini night for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think it'd be good if you want to, like, seriously sweeten something up. I mean, it tastes like candy to me. Like, yeah, it tastes like marzipan to me. In all the right ways.
What did you think of the creme de neige, Rachel?
It's like really tasty cough syrup.
Cough syrup you want to drink.
Try that.
Yeah, did you compare the two?
Yeah, Ray, that.
And then do a little water in between. Actually, there kind of is a similarity to it, I think.
The almond comes out,
yeah.
But it's just like a totally...
It's more aromatic.
Yeah.
The other one goes down so easy and there's no...
I like the aftertaste of the Orjit and Luxardo better than this one. Yeah, because it's more complex for sure.
Yeah.
It does burn more when you drink it.
Yeah,
it's But yeah. They're similar almond flavors. Yeah. I like all the cocktails we've had that have orgeat syrup in them.
It's a good
mixer.
Mixer, yeah. It's what you find in Caribbean drinks.
They're good.
And who doesn't like those?
And huge.
It smells like it would be sickeningly sweet. I haven't tried
really?
It yet.
Really?
It doesn't smell like... Compared to this, it does?
What?
The smell of the Kool-Aid one is sweet but very nutty.
Yeah.
I can Whereas see. The Orgeat is just sort of...
No, I'm very pleased that there's...
I prefer the Orgeat mixture.
Really?
But I prefer the smell of the... What is the...
Creme de Neige. The creme de Neige.
Creme de Neige. Smells more nutty and nice, but the Orgeat is less actually sweet, so I like that one a little better.
Oh, I forgot.
Seems to be a pretty clear division between the sweet people and the non-sweet people.
The Orgeat and Luxardo is like a grown-up drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like alcohol for children.
Yeah. Cough syrup. Yeah.
Exactly.
You need to go to sleep, sweetie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of this. There you go.
Add it to your milk.
Mm. Wow, Ray. I actually thought about that. So,
it is amazing how different they taste, though.
So this came out of St. Louis.
Oh, I came out of St. Louis.
Right. Good things come out.
Did you come
out
of scandal?
Not to my knowledge.
Well,
I got
the Fairbank cocktail.
Yeah, it's like
it brought down a man.
Oh yeah, it probably felt very illicit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was like an inside joke that everybody was participating in.
Yeah.
Except for Charles Fairbank.
Yeah. Except for poor Mr. Fairbank.
Yeah, Cocktail Charlie.
Who was crying into his Fairbank cocktail at home.
So is this iteration in Ted Haig's book the same recipe that they served at the lunch?
Or no.
Is it,
no one knows what that is.
Okay.
From what, from the way the story goes, the caterer, her husband was a bar owner and they lived like around the corner. Mm-hmm. And she saw that there were no drinks on the table, so she had a messenger tell him to make 40 cocktails and they brought him over.
So it's all this woman's fault.
Yes. Literally. I mean,
poor lady.
She thought she was doing something good.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Trying to make it special.
Yeah. Make sure that everybody had something to drink. And destroyed a man's career.
And probably her own.
Well.
Oh, yeah. As a caterer?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I could
see
that.
And that was probably, I would imagine it's a pretty big coup to cater benefit or a, you know, dinner of the vice president.
Yeah.
So she, long fall. Better to fall.
Everyone heard about it and was like, I want cocktails at my dinner. Hiring her.
And then only a decade later, her husband was out of business. So
well, I'm excited.
Either that or it was an illicit situation.
I'm curious, is it two dashes of creme de neige? Is that what it is?
It's two dashes.
So I wonder, I'm curious to see how much we actually taste it. I mean, it seems
more
pretty
color.
There's also the orange
flavor.
Bitters in there.
Right.
It's pretty flavorful.
I'm really curious see how it all mixes together.
Okay, here they have arrived.
Oh my god, they're so pretty.
Yeah, they look good.
Very elegant.
How pretty they are.
Michael has brought us our cocktails.
The color is gorgeous.
Well, then again, like, all of Michael's cocktails are super gorgeous.
Sort of rosy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's right? A very beautiful drink. Very elegant.
I almost kind of think of it too, almost like a gin Cosmo.
No,
and
okay.
That it's kind of got that. You know, it's very difficult to put a dash of that noyo in. I poured a teaspoon and dropped a little bit into each one, and it still gave it a lot of color.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but the color is gorgeous, almost a champagne, you know, kind of rosé.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So we have the Hiram Walker Creme de Noyau, right?
Yes.
And then what other ingredients?
I used the Death's Door gin.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, Death's Door gin. And I also used Millet Pratt Dry Vermouth.
Okay.
And then the Reagan's Number 6 bitters, which is the orange bitters that it called for. It was a clear, like an orange citrus flavored bitters. Very, very popular, very famous, so to speak.
Awesome.
And like I said, the drink itself I found to be, it's got a lot of bite on it. It's mostly gin. Everything else is a dash. There's a lot of vermouth in there, and again, that vermouth is going to take some of the gin edge off, but it's also going to give it much more of a saltier, brinier finish, which is, you know, what people are used to in their martinis.
Yeah.
Once you start adding a citrus element, usually you take that salt element out. You know, sometimes you'll see people doing a martini with a twist and olives. That's a little, those counteract a little bit. But here they've done it in a cocktail. So it's actually in there. The twist and the olives are in the drink already. So that's kind of the take on it.
Yeah.
The fact that it's so pretty and elegant surprises me. It really does. It really does. So I'll let you get at it.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
It's beautiful. I hope it tastes good. I have a feeling we're not going to taste like any creme de noyau in this.
I'd be curious to know if it's just for the color.
I think it's a lot of color and maybe not much substance.
Well, the creme de noyau is such a strong flavor.
Yeah.
I think it'll come through.
You think so?
I think so.
All right, let's find out.
But I'm so used to drinking gin martinis without it, I'm bound to notice it.
I definitely get the salty briny.
Really?
From the vermouth. Yeah, you know? The first taste is definitely the salty briny. But it gets a little sweeter on the end. But the creme de noyau is not very prominent at all.
I have to agree.
You just get a little sweetness from it. It tastes like the ocean.
Yeah. It tastes like a really wet martini.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Oh, yeah, you're not complaining.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. In a little while, I'll hallucinate.
It tastes like the best gin I've ever tasted.
Well, that's that door for you. That's good gin.
I don't think anything overpowers the gin flavor, though.
Really?
No.
I taste is salt. I taste a lot of salt.
Yeah.
Well, I just had some bacon, so.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering if somehow that was intentional.
Maybe.
Does that fit with the story at all? Because remember, this is not the cocktail that was served.
Right.
It's a reproduction to poke fun.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah. At the Senator.
What is Ted?
It tastes nothing like it looks.
Yeah, it looks very hoity-toity. It looks very.
This does not taste pink.
No,
it doesn't taste pink.
It is not.
It is
sweet.
Very misleading.
There's very little sweetness to it.
Maybe part of the problem too, though, is that we all drank that very sweet liqueur before trying it, so it's.
No. No, it's the vermouth is just
the star of the show.
It is what it is, you know. And
I
get a lot of gin flavor.
Are you a martini drinker? Do you like martinis?
I rarely have them.
Yeah,
I rarely have them. So, but I enjoy this. It makes me want to revisit the martini.
I don't know if I've ever. I'm sure I've had sips of a martini, but I don't know if I've ever actually drank a whole
martini. Well, martinis nowadays are pretty much.
Yeah, they're sweeter than this, aren't they?
Well,
yeah.
No, they're bastardized because it's like
appletini.
Well, there's that, but then there's also that most people, you know, say that the amount of vermouth that should be in it is the amount that when you shake the bottle at it.
Yeah.
So it ends up being a glass of gin.
Yeah.
Glass of gin.
So it doesn't taste like this.
So you said
it tastes like a very wet martini.
Yeah, that means it has more vermouth than most martinis that are currently made.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like a real martini.
Yeah.
like a mixed drink.
Yeah. That's interesting. So drier is just more gin.
Yeah.
So if I first soaking wet martini, it would probably taste similar to this.
I'm showing my ignorance here, but I thought it was the opposite, just because I know bitters is what, you know, like vermouth is just a little bit bitter, and so I think that is being the opposite of sweet, kind of the opposite. I'm thinking the dry vermouth. Yeah. I think that's the kind of I've always gotten, and that's why I'm thinking that made it drier.
Yeah.
But it's by adding the wine, you're making it sweeter, and it's the wet. Cool. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Nikki.
No problem.
It does taste like the ocean.
And if you do want to revisit martinis, I recommend them with a twist as opposed to an olive.
Oh, I don't like olives.
Just go full traditional.
Yeah, I don't like olives. I go with a little pearl onion I've seen people use before.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Good.
It is surprising because it does not match its color.
Yeah, it doesn't taste pink.
It tastes nothing like it looks.
It's strong.
Right. It tastes like the ocean.
Yeah. It's with bitters.
Yeah.
And a dash, like I said, a drop or two of a mixer.
Yeah. And it's really the color is all it really gets from that.
I can't believe nobody drinks vermouth anymore. So I can't believe that much vermouth is going to work. I'm going to call for an ounce and 3/4.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, I have 3/4 of an ounce, so I'm
saying. Even when this,
a lot more.
Even when this drink, when it was first made, people were already removing the vermouth from their martinis.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, yeah.
So this, I mean, this is kind of a strange creature for the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. It'd be like us opening a smoking bar now.
Yeah.
Was there any particular reason why vermouth kind of fell out of favor?
Is it more costly?
Well, if you look at the time period, I mean, martinis were drank into the 19th century, like. Mm-hmm. And if you look at cocktails as time goes on, closer to the 20th century, everything gets stronger. Drinks that didn't have alcohol started getting alcohol. Drinks that had different mixers started getting less of them. Mm-hmm. And so you see this rise in alcohol content in drinks around the same time that there's there's less working class, there's more wealth going around, more immigration, and there's more issues with
people getting really drunk and doing stupid things.
Yes. and this is this in conjunction with the immigration issue and fears of communism kind of spurred on prohibition.
We had an alcohol bubble.
Yeah.
And then I would argue that in the last since I've been drinking in the last 10 years or so, the trend has been using really good ingredients.
Yeah.
And still keeping it fairly straight. We don't see a lot of super sweet, fruity drinks. That was kind of a thing in like the 90s for a while.
There's a few tiki bars coming back now.
Well, yeah, the Caribbean cocktail is making a comeback.
But isn't it more about the style and the environment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the whole speakeasy, like, every city has a speakeasy now. And
yeah, they're playing on things that, more than just getting fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. It's selling an experience.
I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, beer could be Budweiser and could be, you know, and
everyone was cool with it.
Yeah, and because everyone was just interested in getting, you know, tanked. And it wasn't a greater experience. It wasn't like, now I feel like there's more people who are just looking for the next thing. And, you know, what kind of crazy stuff can you do? And frankly, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Alcohol can be an art. I mean, if Michael has taught us anything.
Yeah.
And beer can. I mean, it's not just about alcohol. It's about the mixtures and the way things go together.
And this is right on the heels of the whole foodie thing that happened.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I would not get this again.
Really?
No.
That was a fun one.
You're surprised.
Yeah.
Well, this is cool. Because this is, I mean, you like this.
Yeah, I do.
Now, is it, you like it, I mean, it's Death's Door Gin, it's awesome stuff.
Well, yeah, maybe that is amazing gin on its
own. But you like the complex sea flavor, you know, a taste of the ocean with your botanical.
I do.
Yeah.
Because I find some gins are just too floral.
Okay. Too flowery. And this takes that part away. It's not too. It's just tasty gin. And like Ray's struggling with it.
Makes you feel like you want to breathe fire.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Like, you're talking about, like, all the complex flavors and stuff in here. I don't get it.
I get boozy.
I just get booze flavor. Yeah. I get gin flavor. Maybe a little rose flavor. I don't get this at all. I don't get any, like, complex, like, you know, aftertaste or, you know, overtones or anything. I just get booze. I would not get this again.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of Adriatic, you know, like, that's the sea salt flavor.
It tastes like the ocean to me.
Minus the fish.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't taste very, I don't taste very much gin. To me, it just tastes like salt and brine.
Like, oysters, I say, taste like the ocean, but that's just kind of like a nice way of saying they taste like sea mud. This doesn't have any sea mud.
How's the cherry?
My wife might dig this.
Yeah.
Because she likes dirty martinis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I like, I love capers. I love anything pickled. So I would have thought that, given those flavors, that I might have enjoyed this more. But it's just too much in that. I wish it was a little more balanced. But see, you feel that it is.
Yeah.
Between the gin and the food.
And this is the beautiful thing about cocktails, is that...
No one opinion.
Different people like different things. You know,
are you the only? Are you the only would drink again?
Oh, I did. You would? But I mean, again, I'm starting from a place where I already really enjoy a gin martini.
Yeah.
So this is just a slightly wetter, more pink gin martini.
I would not drink this again.
No, I would not drink.
Too much.
But it's the martini drinkers that like it.
I wouldn't send it back. If someone ordered this for me, I would not.
You would not throw it in their face?
Yeah, I wouldn't throw it in their face. I would if I was in, like, you know, with the presence of someone who I didn't want to offend, I would drink it.
Like the President of the United States?
Yeah. Yes. If Barry Obama's came over and ordered me this cocktail.
Or Joe Biden.
Or Joe Biden, sure. I would say... Thank you, my BFF Barry.
But next, can I try some of that honey homebrew you had?
Yeah, exactly. I would sit and I would listen to him talk about his dog. Dogs. His
dog. Oh, and Sunny.
Oh, yeah, Sunny. Oh. Yeah, Sunny.
I would talk Sunny.
We could talk about
Sunny's
his homebrew,
like,
and his the ladies in his family.
Wonderful
and his
ladies.
And his dogs. And I would drink the cocktail and turn my head when I made a face.
if somebody like sent this to me or like handed it to me, I'd be like, this is gorgeous. Oh my goodness, I can't wait to try this. What a beautiful drink.
And then you.
And then I'd be like, oh my. Yeah, that's something.
You'd do a spit take.
That's right. I just find it sad because it is beautiful.
It is really pretty.
And it is like one of those beautiful cocktails I've seen in a long time. It's
maybe
gorgeous.
That's the joke.
That it's beautiful. Like,
it looks better than it is. It's a surprise.
It could just be a tea.
It's a trick.
I want to paint my walls this color. Like, it's really pretty.
It's like champagne.
It's kind of like
it is.
Yeah.
It's rosy and
yeah.
A little gold.
Yeah, it's like a warm peachy pink.
Yeah.
It catches the light very nicely.
It's beautiful. I mean, this is the kind of drink that
like
I want.
Scrotum sweat.
Well,
I guess that would be salty.
I don't know. I feel like this needs a little bit more. I think this needs a little bit more sweetness.
I agree.
Or something to counteract the
other agree.
Stuff.
I think if it had a little bit more creme de neige, I'd probably care for it quite a bit more.
So
yeah, this is in conclusion,
yes,
it tastes like the sea. I would say it's kind of like a dirty martini.
Just to review also, I'm sorry, last thing. The picture in the book looks nothing like the drink that we got. I mean, maybe it's so that the...
It could be the frosted glass.
Well, it says garnished with the cherry, so that's the cherry.
Yeah.
It looks like they didn't stir the one in the picture, so all of the creme de neige
is at the bottom.
Yeah.
The bottom.
It's just, it's like a clear cocktail.
Yeah.
Ours was nice and rosy.
Ours, it's way prettier when you stir it.
Yeah. Ours is much nicer.
I guess that's it. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.
And you can add me as a friend on Snapchat and I'll send you pictures. Rachel J. Sandwich. That's me.
Rachel sends out Snapchats of all of our cocktails.
Yes.
to everyone she knows on Snapchat.
I'm now following Ted Haig on Twitter. I barely ever check Twitter, but now I'm following him.
Oh my god. I'm doomed. Okay.
Sorry.
And with that, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver. Bye now.
Always still and peaceful, you could hear all nature's sounds. Now something's come to bust the peace to pieces, and that snake-like something is 10 feet underground. So I say farewell, fair nights, goodbye, 'cause the pipeline's coming through. Fair nights, forget the quiet nights that you once knew last night.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Ratajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss, the Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground, Dan Cruz for art direction and editing, and Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive, become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and, as it happens, updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.
Cause they need-